the Manager Mojo podcast. I'm Steve Caldwell, author of Manager Mojo, Be the Leader Others Want to Follow. We're here to offer common sense solutions and training for management and leadership issues. We believe that leaders are made, not born. Now, I would love for you to have a free copy of my book. You can pick up your copy by going to ManagerMojo.com. Look for the gold box encouraging you to join the Mojo movement and sign up. There are other free gifts just waiting for you. That's ManagerMojo.com. Now, let's get started with today's topic. Welcome today to the Manager Mojo podcast, and I'm really excited about getting to interview one of my best friends and my best business associates. I just love her to death. Her name is Lauren Bailey Shar, and I've known Lauren for a long time, and I just think the world of her. And I know that you're going to have a great time listening to her perspective today about management and leadership. So let me tell you just a little bit about Lauren first as we start. Lauren is an 18-year veteran of the inside sales industry. She's worked in both sales leadership and training leadership positions, and she's launched inside sales teams around the world. She was head of global training for worldwide conglomerate SAP, and she actually designed their first inside sales onboarding program. While running as well as doing other things with SAP, she worked in 10 countries to build their first sales telesales force, and she's also been a sales director for Ravana, formerly known as Teletech, and there she was known for developing high-potential managers into successful leaders. But the thing I love the most about her today is that in 2007, Lauren decided to go out on her own, and she started a performance breakthrough company called Factor 8. And Factor 8 helps other organizations translate their sales goals into tactical behavior, and they do process changes that produce measurable results. I can assure you that Lauren is a world-class trainer, and her dynamism comes through in every single thing she does. She's a proud mom of two baby boys and married to her husband, who also happens to be named Steve, so it's a good thing. I like the name, Lauren, and has pets and just has a good time. So, Lauren, welcome to the Manager Mojo podcast.
Hey, thank you so much, Steve. This is it, man. I feel like I can retire after that introduction. Thank you
well,
so much.
Well, you earned every bit of that introduction, and absolutely are a great addition to any company. I highly recommend you all the time.
Well, can I tell you something, Steve? I've got to tell your listeners something that you didn't include in that.
Okay.
I've had a wonderfully successful management and leadership career because someone took a chance on me when I was 23 years old and gave me my first inside sales management job. And that person's name is Steve Caldwell.
Lauren, thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank
you.
A lot was in motion that day.
The greatest pleasure that I've had is being able to work with awesome people just like yourself, and I love seeing exactly how your career has grown, and it's just wonderful to see. It's one of the things I love most about management and leadership.
I know you do, and that you've mentored people your entire career. I'm lucky to be one of them, and as our lucky viewers today with this podcast. It's cool.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Let's dive in, Lauren, because I want people to hear your perspective, because they need to learn a little bit about management and leadership. So what I want to do is I want to take you back to when you really did become a manager for the first time. And I know that you had worries and doubts about going into management at that point. So if you don't mind, share with our listeners, what are some of the things that were going in through your mind? What did you have to kind of come to terms with so that you could become the best person that you could be?
So good. I had to get real about the fact that I was seriously overemployed. That's the honest to God truth. I had no idea what I was doing. So, right, we all have a great sense of confidence, and we get the job, and then we say, oh, God, now what do I do? And that's That's the truth. I think I spent 6 months in my first real management job. Every day I'd come home and just stare at the wall and either cry or drool or just comatose for a little while. I mean, there was a lot of overwhelm. And so I had to come to grips with understanding truly what my role was, trying to manage my personal life and health and well-being, which took a real nosedive for a while.
Right.
And then the other thing, honestly, that was really hard for me was the interplay with my peers.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the new kid on the block, and I was really young, and I was the youngest person on my team, the youngest of my peers, and I tried to hide it all the time. Right. I mean, I remember one of my first management jobs, actually before you hired me, I bought reading glasses. I mean, I was 22 years old trying to wear glasses to look older. Right.
Right.
I finally passed 40. I feel like I've made it. I'm old enough to have this job. but that was hard. It was trying to find my place. It was, who am I to my team? Who am I to my boss? Who am I to this group of peers? And how many of them know that I'm a complete fraud? Because I feel like I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, did you feel like that, you know, okay, now I'm struggling really to understand myself a little bit, but I've also got to deal with all these people that are different than me.
Absolutely.
And, you know, did you find that a challenge, or did you just come to a point where you began to say, you know what, I think I can do that?
It was a huge challenge, and I think that it's probably a challenge every new manager faces. Something I've talked about a lot as I've had the opportunity now to train and manage and mentor new managers and leaders. I think that the number one most surprising thing when we take a management role is, I'm going to be really honest here, Steve, it's the complete disappointment that we feel in the people around us. I mean, that's a horrible thing to say, right? But it's the truth. When you have strived and worked and achieved and you get promoted to the level of a manager, and now all of a sudden you are managing a team of people who frankly do not care as much as you do, it's shocking. And guess what? Sometimes you see it even in the people around you. And it's actually a surprise. It was to me. It was a surprise to me that they weren't like me. And it doesn't mean that I was great, right? I had a lot of shortcomings. But what I was driven and committed, and I wanted to do a really, really great job, and I was going to work 20 hours a day if I had to do it, right? I'm sure that all of your viewers feel like they have that drive, like, come on, just give me the chance. And then it took a while for it to sink in that everybody wasn't on that same playing field. Everybody wasn't in the same place in their life. Not everybody had the same priorities. Not everybody had the same, behaviors. And I think that was just a young and immature look at the world, right? I was very myopic and was very me focused. And that meant that everybody was like me, and I was dead wrong.
Well, I've got to tell you that, all of us, I believe, at least go through some stage where we believe that everybody thinks like we do.
Right, right.
And I shared myself that I experienced the exact same emotion that you did, that they weren't like me, and I didn't get it because I was like, okay, why are you not as ambitious and driven as I am? I thought everybody was. Isn't that what we're here to do?
You say to yourself, what's wrong with them? But that's not right either, right?
No, it's not.
It's different. It's not worse.
Well, you quickly came to some understanding. Do you remember where the understanding was for you that you began to transition and say, wait a minute, it's not about me, it's about the team?
Yeah, absolutely. I really do remember that. I was working for you. And actually, I think I was, that we had a different leader at the time, but it was the same company, Steve. And I realized that I was different than my peers. I realized that I was going to do things differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that it wasn't about winning anything except the respect of my team.
There you go.
So, yeah, I had a really new team, and they had a new leader. And honestly, none of us knew what we were doing. And it was a tough gig, right? We were doing acquisition, business-to-business sales in the Fortune 500 space.
Yeah,
right?
Not easy.
Think about that, right? The only accounts you're going to get in the Fortune 500 space that are new are the ones that nobody else has cracked in the 5 years that the department's been in place before you got there.
Right,
so it was
right.
An uphill battle. And once we started really focusing internally and trying to figure out how do we help each other,
Right.
We play off each other's strengths. How do we go fill the holes of knowledge and skills that we have? Like, mm-hmm. let's recognize them and address them.
Right.
Then we started to rise up. And I'll tell you, we went in one quarter from dead last to number one.
Yep. And that's the difference between understanding that you're all a part of a team and it's not just about you, isn't it?
Yeah. Honestly, it was. I think that for a while I was more worried about being popular with my peers and being the cool new girl instead of the dorky new girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then I finally realized that, wait a minute, I don't necessarily agree with the way everybody else here manages.
Right.
And my team needs different things. And I do have a few special skills and abilities. And honestly, it was like, you know what? Screw everything else except making these people successful. And
what a wonderful thing.
It clicked.
What a wonderful thing. And I've got to tell you, Lauren, that so many people really never come to that conclusion. Mm-hmm. They don't ever have that aha moment that it's about making your people successful.
And that's it.
They make you successful, but you have to make them successful.
Bingo. Yeah.
And a big, big, big secret. So you've talked about some of the struggles that you had. You know, you were thinking about peer pressure. You're trying to deal with people that were different than you. Mm-hmm. What did you struggle with the most, though? What was the thing that really just dug at you and you had to fight it every day?
Wow. You know what? Honestly, if I look at the theme over those first few years, it was switching from reactive to proactive. It's creating a plan, managing my time, managing the distractions and the interruptions and the million other things that pull. And I'll tell you what, I don't think there's a busier person in the world than a sales manager, right? I know that you'll have all types of different managers on your podcast, but I grew up in sales and right now I work with a lot of sales managers and I have utmost respect for a frontline sales manager.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Nobody has more demands on their time. And yet anything that's new in the organization, we give it to the sales managers. Oh, they can do the coaching. Oh, they can do the training. Oh, they'll run that report. Oh, they'll test the system. Oh, they'll talk to the customers. Why aren't their managers doing this, that, and the other? And so what the biggest struggle was every day was trying to create a strategy for myself.
Right.
Right. And like getting up and out on top to see my world, my expectations, my job, and what I needed to take as actions in that job. And then every day afterwards, the hard part was sticking to it.
Yeah, it's not easy, isn't it? You've got so many things that are really attacking you during the day. Well, so obviously, personal productivity is always important. It's one of the most important skills for someone to develop. Do you have a couple of personal productivity tips that you'd like to share with people that are maybe they're just struggling with the same things that you and I struggled with?
And I think they are personal tips, to be honest with you, Steve. Everybody's got a different system. I don't know if mine's any better than anybody else's, but I'll tell you a system I came up with that week. In fact, I'm going to grab it. This is a printout of my daily outlook.
Yeah.
And I would print it for the week and I'd staple it together. Right. Today, I just do a daily sheet and I write down everything I've got to do that day. And it's on a sheet. Right. So it's got my other meetings on it. I think some people do it electronically. I had to write it down because, frankly, I love to cross it off.
Right.
Right. And anything that happened during the day, I took my notes here. And I'll tell you what, I have run back through from a year and a half ago to find notes because I knew it was, that was around April 20th that happened and I can find the notes. Action items, phone calls, voicemails, everything went on this one page.
Right.
I never left until anything, it has to be crossed off or moved to the next day. So that helped me feel on top of it. That's tip number one. Tip number two, I learned this because I'm a PI fan. And I know a lot of your viewers are PI fans. And what my predictive index told me was that I am grossly proactive. If I don't have an opportunity to proact, if I have to be reactive, I'm unhappy.
Right.
Right. It's like a six sigma A over C spread. And so what I learned is to spend the first 30, maybe even 60 minutes of every day taking care of my list.
Yeah.
Do not open email until you have proacted, because email's reactive. Voicemail's reactive.
Right.
Team members are reactive. If you've got to get in there an hour early before everybody to get your list of stuff done, do it, because, man, it was what a difference in how I felt.
Yeah.
And how I actually reacted to everything else during the day, because it wasn't that gnawing, oh, I still haven't gotten my to-do list done.
Yeah.
Those are two huge ones for me. And then, honestly, at the end of every day, setting up the next day, or at the end of every week, setting up the next week. What do you need to get accomplished? And then my last tip, fourth tip, is put it in Outlook. Block your time.
Mm-hmm.
If you know that you need to prep for your team meeting, right, and you've got a team meeting today at noon, be smart enough as you're planning your day or your week to go in and block an hour's worth of time the day before, the hour before, to plan and have time to plan for that team meeting.
Yeah, I see leaders all the time that are overbooked.
Oh, yeah, triple booked. It happens.
You know, they're doing stuff that makes no sense. Nobody can do numerous things at one time. Our brains won't allow it. We just don't have that bandwidth. Multitasking is a myth.
Darn it if I don't keep trying, though.
Huh?
Darn it if I don't keep trying, though, right?
Well, we all think we can multitask, but we can't. Our brain just doesn't let us.
Yeah.
Let's talk about communication now. Did you feel like that you had to learn how to communicate with people differently, that thought different than you did? And if so, how did you go about modifying your communication style?
It's a really good question. I can tell how alike we are just by the questions you ask. Yes is the short answer to that. I was doing it wrong. And I was doing it wrong in multiple different ways. One, everything I do is in a hurry. That's part of that Six Sigma, A over C, three low C, right?
Yep.
I'm always in a hurry. So I try to do things as quickly as possible, and you can't rush communication. You just can't rush it. And it seriously has taken me 10, 20 years to understand the look on other people's faces means they have no flippin' idea what I'm talking about, right? Right? And I mean, I train thousands of people every year, and finally I'm getting it that I'm moving too fast sometimes and they can't read my mind. So I had to slow down.
Right.
I had to also, here's a second thing. As a busy manager, I did way too much stuff in email. And let me tell you, even today, I know how electronic everybody is. Way too many leaders are hiding behind email. It's
Agreed.
Not effective. You can't motivate a team on email. And listen, you tell your sales reps that you can't sell over email. Guess what? When you're talking about getting a team to move in a new direction, that ain't nothing but a sales job, right?
Right.
You can't sell over email. So get up and out from behind email. Same thing when there's a conflict. What I learned early on was stop the email chains. Do not be that guy who's shouting and typing in caps and email, right? Anytime you're replying, if there's more than three chains in an email, get your ass out of the chair and go find the person that you need to talk to.
Right? It makes so much more sense, doesn't it?
And that's the mark of a leader. That's the truth, right? And the leader goes in to seek first to understand, right?
Right.
So it's not going to that person's desk so you can yell at them face to face. It's going to that person's desk, and I call it race to the sword. If you fall on the sword first, everyone will be so eager to help pull you back off the sword.
Right.
But if you go in blaming, they're going to stab you as fast as possible.
Absolutely.
Right? So you go to their desk and say, listen, I'm the idiot. I'm sorry. I really screwed this up. I don't get it. Can you talk to me like I'm five and walk me through what I'm supposed to do here? Right.
Yeah.
And they will help. But if you go in and say, what the hell are you thinking? Why are you all over my account? Or, you know, right. Then they're just going to come back and beat you up.
We create so much of conflict ourselves as leaders because we don't realize sometimes we forget that it's about them and not about us. And it happens to all of us. We all do it. But it's really cool whenever we really get this comprehension in our brain and we know better and we'll just put a brake on ourselves and go talk to them.
Yep. Hey, you got to check the ego.
Yeah. That's pretty hard to do sometimes.
It's true. It's true, especially in our industry, right? I mean, we're in sales because we're good. Right?
People sometimes are intimidated by that.
Well, and I think that we've gotten used to being getting away with a lot of crap because people are intimidated by that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? We have strong personalities, and we lead teams with strong personalities. And, you know, we're salesmen. We keep the lights on.
Yeah.
And guess what? That doesn't fly with everybody else. who works in that building.
As a matter of fact, not only does it not fly, it comes at you like a missile. So you have to be careful with that.
Yeah. I blew myself up a few times.
We all have done that.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to ask you another aspect of leadership, and that is making decisions. And I find managers that really struggle with decision making. And, you know, tell us your view on how important it is for managers to make decisions and how do you kind of go about doing that?
No, it's critical. It's critical. When I look back at times where I struggled the most in different management and leadership roles, and it was because of my inability to make a quick decision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's the first thing I'll say is, what's helped me a lot is doing some research and some self-development on decision-making. There are actually 5 to probably 10 different models that you can use.
Right.
To help make a strong decision. I think most of us have heard about weighing pros and cons, right? But there's weighted scores, there's head-to-head, there's 5 or 6 different methodologies that I use on a daily basis that you need to flex that muscle, you need to train your brain a little bit. Because
right.
Decision-making is not an art, it's a science.
Right.
Now, go learn the science, step one. Step two, the art is doing it quickly and with conviction.
Right.
I think the biggest mistake people make in decision-making, Steve, is not making the decision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Even if you make the wrong one, it's okay. You can go backwards, right? You can undo it. You can say, sorry, screwed up, wrong decision. But the longer you wait as a leader to make a decision and communicate that decision, every single hour that goes by, you're losing the people around you. Okay?
Yeah. People hate maybe, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. And we'll see, and it depends, and right? And here's the hardest part, to be honest with you. As a frontline manager and even a second line or a director, very often, in my experience, the reason you can't make the decision is because you're waiting on somebody else, right?
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the direction. I'm waiting for the permission. I'm waiting for the approval. I'm waiting for the information, whatever it is. But the people around you, they don't give a damn.
No, and they don't know that either.
Bingo. So you know what? Every once in a while, the biggest moves I think I've made in my life was when I quit waiting, and I did it anyway. And I asked for forgiveness instead of permission.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I remember when one of my first roles as a training manager, we'd started this training department, and I was waiting for one of the executives to explain to me what it was we wanted to train our managers on.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're developing manager training, and I was waiting for the direction. Where do we need to take it? What are we supposed to do? Right? And
right.
I was waiting, and I was waiting, and I was waiting, and I realized he doesn't know. Right? It's my job to say, here's what I think we should be doing.
There you go.
So the rule of thumb for me is, besides studying and to create the art and then doing it quickly, that's the science and the art of it. The biggest lesson is when you feel like you're waiting to make a decision, go make it.
Yeah.
Make it, explain to people why you've made it, how you've made it, and instead of waiting for the direction, create the direction.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it snaps on for people that, guess what, I'm a leader.
Right.
I'm going to make this decision. I'm going to decide, and I'm going to set the strategy, and I'm not waiting for somebody to tell me what it is. They'll tell you if you screw up.
Right.
Right?
Well, absolutely. There's always second guessers, right?
Yeah.
Well, the thing that I find very interesting about your comment is that you finally came to the point where, hey, I got to make the decision. But what you really were doing is that you evaluated the risk and you decided that, look, I've got to risk either losing my people or getting something done.
Yep.
How did you get comfortable with that risk?
You know what? As soon as you do it the first time, it was really easy from there on out. It really was. And I think that the hard part about that is recognizing that that's the situation you're in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Managers are in the middle. We have executive strategy and company strategy, and we have tactical application, right? We have tactical mm-hmm. execution of that strategy. And it's the
right.
manager's job to interpret this and to set the goals and manage this, right?
Right.
And I'm going to be really frank with you. The higher up you go in any organization, the less leadership you get one-on-one because you're supposed to be able to give it to yourself. Mm-hmm. Okay. So here I sit, or here others sit as a director or a senior manager, and right, your job is to interpret the strategy down. But what you realize is that strategy isn't always interpreted for you, right? There might not be a company mission that's driving you here. There might not be any experience in what you're doing as a team. There is no roadmap for it. And once you realize that you're waiting for somebody to give you that direction, oh, I can't set a vision because I don't know what I'm driving towards, or I can't set goals because nobody set them for me. Okay, mm-hmm. Recognize that that's the situation where you need to get on your big boy or big girl pants and set it yourself.
Right.
And once you do, it's freedom.
Yeah.
Because you quit waiting. You quit having the stress of maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. What should I be doing? What's expected of me? All these questions that you have, Franklin, you have more and more the higher you go.
Right.
Because an executive of a company, their job is to look out and forward. Okay? And if you're reporting to an executive whose job it is to look out and forward, how much time do they spend looking down and managing and leading you? Mm-hmm. A lot less than you spend with your team, I'll tell you that. So recognize that there is space for you to create your own goals, to create your own mission, to create your own vision, to create your own strategy. I don't mm-hmm. care what level you're at. You can absolutely inspire a team of frontline sales reps with a team vision.
Right.
You don't have to be the president of a company to create and map out that strategy. Does that make sense? I feel like maybe I've gone on a weird tangent.
Totally makes sense. And I think it's great advice for all of us because it's really saying that it's up to me to decide. I don't have to wait for permission on everything in relation to my team. And I think that's great advice for all of us. Now, you mentioned the lack of one-on-ones that people have. And I happen, I teach people all the time that you have to conduct one-on-ones. And I don't care what level you are, whether you're in the C-suite or you're on frontline management. If you're not talking to people one-on-one, how do you know what they're doing? And I know that you kind of share some of that, I'm sure, don't you, that you believe in one-on-ones?
It's so funny. I probably didn't realize until this moment why I believe in it so staunchly. It's because you taught it to me. I've been preaching that for 15 years. 100% you need the one-on-one. Okay. Management ratios differ at every company. Right?
Absolutely.
You'd like to recommend somewhere around a 10 to 15 to 1. Right? You're going to max out there. Why? Because you won't have the time to spend with them one-on-one. Mm-hmm. Different positions need different amounts of time.
They do.
That's the honest truth, right? So
sure.
I was leading sales reps. We would have a dedicated 1 hour one-on-one once a month. We talked every day. Right? We did team meetings, we did huddles, we would do account strategies, question and answer. But the dedicated 1 hour of one-on-one was about their performance and about them as humans.
Yeah,
that's one reason to do it.
That's a great policy. And one of the things that drives me crazy, Lauren, is that people will not dedicate that time to their people. And so what they do is they rely on the company's annual review, and that for many people, that's the first time all year they've actually had a chance to sit down with their manager.
Yeah, that's just criminal.
That's not the right way to do it. So it's I like the fact, you know, hey, set aside that time. Now, I do want to point something else out that you talked about here that may go over people's head because you said, okay, I'll get 1 hour a month with that person. But you also talked about talking to them daily. Mm. Think about how many people don't do that. They don't talk to their people every day. Okay. They let them go for 2-3 days at a time, and then they're wondering how they got off track.
Yeah.
I know you see this every day yourself in businesses, so you're conscious of doing it. So that's a type of coaching that you're doing. So I want to kind of get your idea of coaching people. How do you motivate and coach people, encourage them to perform?
Gosh, wow. That's a huge question, right?
So you're able to handle it, though.
Yeah. Steer me when I get off track. So I think that the very first and easiest thing to do is make sure that you do touch every person on your team every day. And that's a good morning. How are you? Thanks for being here. Okay? It's that simple. If you do nothing else.
Can you just say that again?
Yeah, right?
Would you do that?
Oh, go into the office, walk the row, make a phone call, do it on IM if you've got a virtual, whatever it is. Good morning. How are you today? Right? And sometimes it's different every day. Sometimes it's like, hey, how you doing? Man, I am struggling myself. You want to get some coffee? And other times it's, hey, woohoo, how are you? Let's have a great day. Welcome to work. Right? I guess what I'm saying is it doesn't have to be any certain way. It just has to be you.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, face this person as a human and say, hi, how are you? Right? I mean, we spend more time with the people at work than we do with anybody else in our lives. For goodness sakes, if we're not building some sort of a personal relationship or connection, well, studies have shown if we don't build that personal connection, they will leave. Right?
And they do every day.
And they do every day. And guess what? The marketplace has changed. We don't have a line of successful, highly qualified people lining up to work for us anymore. You cannot replace these people that easily. That ain't how it works anymore. We work for them. That's the secret. So step one, get out and connect with them on a human level absolutely every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Step number two, make sure that you have that one-on-one touch point. The more complex the job or the higher the level, if you're managing managers, it's a weekly. At most, maybe biweekly, okay? And during that one-on-one time, it ain't all business. It's not, how have you finished this project, and here's your scorecard, right? We're talking about people. That's your time to be with those people. Do it for lunch. Go get a soda. Get bond with them. Find out what their goals are and their drivers are, because your job is to help them be successful, and how are you going to do that unless you know what success is to them? Okay.
Well, if you don't ask, you're never going to know.
It's probably the smartest thing you can do. And I, as I manage new teams and I would move on or I would be given additional people, I started a template. It was a new employee interview, right? What gets you up in the morning? What are you working for? What's a long-term and a short-term goal? How do you like to communicate? How do you like to be managed? Get to know them as a human.
Right?
That's step one. But what's funny is in all of the things we just talked about, which frankly should be common sense, right? And if it's not, you need to read a lot more communication and leadership books. We still didn't talk about coaching. The art of coaching is, boy, do a lot of people screw that up. Can I just be really honest?
Yeah. How do they do that? How do they screw it up? I want to hear it myself.
Yeah. Okay. So
I want to hear your take on it.
My world is sales, okay? So I'm going to use a sales example for you. The number one way I see sales managers screw up coaching is coaching isn't telling the rep what to say on the phone, right? Coaching isn't listening during a live call and IMing them what to do next, right?
Right.
It's crazy. It's not about getting that sale. You got to remember the goal of coaching. Coaching is to help this person improve their skills.
Right.
Not win that sale. You got to be willing to let it go so that you can coach the human afterwards. Okay? You know it's coaching when it's a one-on-one discussion after listening to a call, be it recorded, live, remote, whatever. And it is a give and take, a 50-50 conversation about what went well, what can be improved, et cetera. The number one way I judge very, very quickly, because we do a lot of assessments for managers, right? In fact, we just completed one, and we ranked managers on their ability to coach. And you know what the quickest cheat answer is to find that out? You listen for questions. Coaches ask, they don't tell. So I can listen to three people coach at the same time, because like I told you, I'm a chronic multitasker. Right? And actually deliver an accurate rating, because all I have to do is listen for who's telling, who's talking more, who's asking questions, right? If the rep's owning the conversation, not only is it going to be more effective, the rep's going to enjoy it more. And here's the last thing for you. When you listen to a call, this is funny. When you listen to a call that really sucks, and we've all listened to those calls, right? And it's physically painful for you to let the call finish, and not jump in and finish it yourself. And it's physically painful to quietly and slowly ask the rep afterwards what went well and where do they think they can improve, because you're sitting on a list of like 15 things and you're like, oh my God, do this better, right? The rep will always work on something faster and with more verve and commitment if they pick what they're working on. So your list of 15 things, if you ask the rep what they want to work on and it's number 10, there's 9 things above it that are more important to you, let it go. Because if the rep picks it, he's going to work on it. Does that make sense?
It more than makes sense.
Yeah. So that, I don't know. That was like, you know, 20 hours and years of coaching experience boiled into 5 or 6 tips and tricks.
And that boils down to a real attitude of teaching, because you can't teach somebody everything in one session.
And you can't make them be like you.
If you try, you can try, but it's they're gonna suck at it.
Exactly, because not you, right? I mean, and I used to do that. God, I would write them scripts. Here's what I would say. Say this.
Yeah.
Doesn't work. We don't do that in sales training either.
No.
We refuse to write scripts. We'll help companies with starter scripts, but if you help the rep see here's what the goal is, right? Here's what the customer's thinking. Here's where you're trying to get.
Right.
And then coach them with their own words, 10 times more successful. They will. It sticks.
It reminds me of the example people. It's the difference between people that have GPS systems in their car and they malfunction and they just keep going down the wrong road until they crash.
They drive into the lake.
Yeah. They drive right into the lake. And the reality is that people will do that. There are some that will do that. They want to script it out to the point that they're off in the lake and that there's no personal initiative there. So I love that discussion. I think
on
target.
You said, Steve, I have to go back to that. It's, I think there's 2 things to keep in mind. You said it's about teaching people.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have a genuine love for developing people.
Absolutely.
If you're a successful leader. Right? And I've learned over the years, I just ask people, what made you get into management? And when I hear money, I know they're screwed. And when I hear power or anything that sounds like power, right?
Right.
I want to be in charge, I know they're screwed.
Right.
Because they're not going to enjoy it. Because on a day-to-day basis, what your job is developing people and helping other people be successful. And if you don't have a love for that, frankly, you're going to make less money and work more hours doing something that you don't enjoy.
Amen. It happens to people all the time.
It really does. And it's okay to not go into management. I love it when I find people who are like, you know what? I am really happy in my job. I've got one of my best girlfriends from college, right? She keeps getting promoted. And she keeps fighting it, right? Now she understands. She's like, could you please just let me be an individual contributor? Because the stress in my life when I have to manage other people is not worth it. I hate it. They frustrate the crap out of me.
There you go.
She's like next to a heart attack all the time. And so she's finally learned it's not worth it. I'm going to be much happier if you let me be an individual contributor. And I applaud those people because it's not for everybody.
It's not, but that's for sure. Well, let me change the subject just a little bit. I want to ask you, what do you consider that it takes to be an outstanding boss? How would you describe an outstanding boss?
So I'm going to answer that question the way I hope everybody else thinks of it. And what we have to think is, what do we want for our boss to be for us? Right?
Right.
I mean, it's the golden rule, basically. And we don't think about that. Very often, I think sometimes that's the self-centeredness of being caught in, oh gosh, I'm a new manager. What does that mean? And who the hell cares? Just mm-hmm. be a boss, right?
Right.
Your relationship with your boss, studies have shown, is the number one determinant of your happiness on the job.
Right.
Right? And we've all had horrible bosses, right? I still tell stories about this one boss, not Steve Caldwell. So what do I think makes a great boss? First and foremost, very clear expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Help me understand what is expected of me and what the guardrails are. Second, regular feedback. And that goes back to what you said, right? Don't wait till an annual review to tell me I'm doing something wrong, for goodness sakes. And let's be honest, when I say regular feedback, that means to me I want regular pats on the back.
Absolutely.
Tell me I'm doing a good job.
Absolutely.
Catch me doing something right and recognize me for it. Right? So expectations and feedback, absolutely 1 and 2. And the number 3 is, gosh, I feel like I'm repeating what I said before, but that's be a human. help me get to know me as a person. Let me know you as a person. Know what my kids' names are. Know where I'm going on vacation. Help get behind me and what my dreams are. And let me feel like there's somebody in my corner, right? The best bosses are the ones who are my cheerleaders and somebody who's helping drive me to where I want to be. And I feel they respect me and admire me for who I am and what I can bring. And the worst bosses are the ones that I feel like are constantly trying to catch me doing something wrong, right? They're not going to give me the direction I need, and then they're going to nitpick the crap out of what I actually do, right? Or come back and question it, or not be there when I needed some support.
Right.
Take the fall for me every once in a while.
Yeah.
Right? Fight for me.
Yeah. That's being together, united in management and not divisive. Yeah. It's not about catching people in things that are wrong.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Great advice. Well, what would you tell somebody that's considering going into management today? What are the two things you'd ask them to make sure that you know before you accept that job?
Wow. That you know what the job looks like and you're doing it for the right reasons. And that goes back to if you do it for the money, it's probably not a good move.
Right.
Do you genuinely enjoy helping people? Are you the person on your team now that people come to for help? Are you that person? And do you love that part of your job, even though it's not your job? And if that's the case, then you're going in the right direction.
There you go.
That's the easy first one. And then the second one is, as quickly as possible, assess the job, the goals, the roles, the daily commitments, and create a strategy. Get out from under it and get on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's the sooner you can move from reactive to proactive, the more successful you're going to be. And that means studying what the job is, right? And not just, right, you're going to drink from a fire hose and you can stay there and drown. Or you can take the time, and it's probably at home over a weekend even, or late at night for a few weeks, and get outside of that fire hose and survey what your job is and who your people are and what the strengths are. And there's about a million different ways to do this, but create a plan for yourself and then stick to the plan.
Awesome. Lauren, I want to thank you today for being a part of the Manager Mojo podcast. I know our listeners have really learned a lot. I've had such a great time listening to your perspective.
Thanks.
Congratulations on your great success and continued success in the future.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure this has been.
Thanks for joining me today on the Manager Mojo podcast. Let's rock the world. Please encourage your friends to subscribe to the podcast, and I would love for you to share and connect with me on social media. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And don't forget to pick up your free copy of Manager Mojo, Be the Leader Others Want to Follow, by going to managermojo.com and signing up to get your free gifts. Until next time, I encourage you to exercise your mojo and become the leader that others want to follow.